From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Joe Biden, among his first acts in office, was to push for an increase in the federal minimum wage. In a speech showcasing his economic recovery plan, given just 2 days after his inauguration, the new president said this.
Look. Our recovery plan also calls for an increase in the minimum wage at least $15 an hour. No one in America should work 40 hours a week making below the poverty line. $15 gets people above the poverty line. We have so many millions of people working.
And that's President Joe Biden speaking after inauguration about raising the minimum wage. Democrats in the House and Senate reintroduced their Raise the Wage Act, which would raise the floor for compensation to $15 an hour over 5 years. The idea of workers earning $15 an hour was first pushed years ago by masses of working class Americans, immigrant workers, and organized labor, whose full demand was for $15 an hour and a union. Will Democrats in the White House, House of Representatives, and the Senate demand and deliver what is needed at a time of historic unemployment, rising inequality, and other economic ills facing workers? Joining me to help answer that question is Sean Richman, author of Tell the Bosses We're Coming, a new action plan for workers in the 21st century. Richman spent a decade and a half as a union organizer and representative. He's a program director of the Harry Van Arsdale Jr. School of Labor Studies at the SUNY Empire State College, and his writings have been published in The American Prospect, In These Times, Jacobin, The New York Daily News, and The New York Times. Welcome to the program, Sean.
Thanks for having me back.
So first, let's talk about your impression of Biden's case that he made that people who are working full time should at least be making enough money to get them across the poverty line, and that he wants to raise the minimum wage. Yet the Democratic Party is talking about getting to $15 an hour in 5 years, not now.
Yeah, I mean, if the minimum wage was indexed to inflation at its high water mark, which was in the late 60s or the early 70s, we'd be closer to $20 an hour right now. So $15 is, I view it as a down payment on what we deserve. And taking 5 years to get there is less than ideal, although the most impressive thing about the bill that Biden is calling for is that it would, once the wage gets up to $15, it would index it to inflation so that we wouldn't be caught in this cycle of government intransigence, Republican intransigence, and inflation eats away what you've got. We would bring it up to a more proper poverty wage, but we really should be closer to $20 or $25. And that's a future fight. I view this as a down payment on what we deserve.
Right, because in the past, anytime the federal minimum wage has been raised, it has been forced to be done through legislation, and it hasn't been indexed. So therefore, it is stuck at the appallingly low rate of something like $7.25 an hour. And of course, states have set their own minimum wages. What's been interesting has been that those states that have raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour, or even some localities and cities really, have been good test cases for economic activity for when you raise that wage, because you know that the standard Republican response is going to be, well, this is going to lead to job losses and a loss of economic growth, right?
I don't know what the Republican case is anymore. I mean, the Republicans in Congress and in the Senate are just in living in such a fact-free world. And it's almost helpful that, that McConnell has sort of given up the game, that really it's just about prevent your opposition party from doing anything that helps people so that in 2 years you can run on the fact that nothing has improved. They have no case. There is no case. The field of economics, which is an incredibly conservative field and largely bankrolled by the billionaire class, is sort of has a widespread consensus that raising the minimum wage to $15 is not going to affect the number of jobs out there. And in fact, will have like really positive multiplier effects on the economy.
So the state of Florida, while voting for President Trump on November 2020, also voted to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. There's clearly a desire, even among rank and file Republicans, to see a higher wage. I mean, honestly, we can't go much longer without pushing for this. But then there's that other aspect of the demand that started it all. You know, the $15 an hour became this incredible rallying cry when unions like SEIU worked with fast food workers and other workers, low-wage workers across the country and cities across the country, New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles. But their demand wasn't just $15 an hour. And of course, this was during the Obama years that they started this demand. It was $15 right. and a union. What are Democrats doing on the a union part of that message?
Well, I mean, the PRO Act is sort of the basement standard, or maybe even it's below the basement in terms of what we need to do to restore some power for workers and some bargaining leverage. And the PRO Act would amend the National Labor Relations Act. It would repeal much of what the Taft-Hartley law did in terms of restricting solidarity activism, in terms of rolling back free speech rights of workers.
And just to mention that this was the act that the House passed about a year ago.
It's the act that the House passed a year ago.
The Protecting the Right to Organize Act. Yeah.
Yes. It would allow for a card check in some cases where the employers have broken the law so badly you can't have a fair election. It would provide for arbitration and mediation and first contracts because, amazingly, as hard as it is to win an NLRB certification election to get the right to bargain, half of all unions that do that still don't result in a union contract because employers just surface bargain. So it's got a lot of really good language in there. It's also got some good language restoring the right to strike. I've got concerns about it. I mean, I think that the Democrats are going to make a real push for it. I'm not generally a cockeyed optimist on this sort of thing, but we're in a position here now where Joe Biden has inherited crisis stacked upon crisis stacked upon crisis, and the low rates of unionization and the imbalance of power in the workplace, and the inability for unions to have a broader reach in their political education programs is really an existential threat for Democrats continuing to win elections. And they're very late to the game. They finally realized it. And they see this as a must do. Enough of them, I think, see this as a must do. Now, the question is, obviously, there's the filibuster in the Senate, which seems to be a fairly fast moving situation, because I think McConnell really gave up the game too early in just revealing that, you know, this is just about stopping Joe Biden from having anything to run on in 2022 and 2024. And we have a real crisis. We actually have to get money in people's pockets. We have to solve some problems. And you have to let these very popular programs, amending our labor law, raising our minimum wage to $15, are massively popular with voters. You got to get them through. And so if the filibuster in the Senate gets repealed, you could get the PRO Act very quickly. But even short of that, you've got Bernie Sanders as the incoming chairman of the Budget Committee, and this whole process of reconciliation on budgetary items, which is where you can finally get to a 50 plus one vote instead of a needing 60 votes, comes into place. And, you know, you can't put everything through reconciliation, but if you have something that is clearly has a budgetary and economic impact, there's a road there. And you got to imagine that Bernie sees this and is planning to move it through there. And that Biden too is looking for Bernie to move the PRO Act or something like it through budget reconciliation process.
Let's talk about the new Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, who in her confirmation hearing last week, or the week that she basically was speaking before the Senate for her confirmation, she made some pretty forward-sounding, progressive-sounding comments about the importance of getting people, getting money into people's hands, the importance of addressing the fact that working families are being left behind. She even addressed the fact that people of color are disproportionately impacted by economic inequality. What sorts of things can Treasury Secretary Yellen do? And are you heartened by her, you know, replacing the Trump guy?
Well, yeah, I'm heartened by every Trump appointee that
I can't even remember his name, but his face is in my head. I think of my brain has actively forgotten every Trump.
honestly, it's a little outside of my area of expertise. I think that there's a lot of people doing fascinating work on antitrust laws, and antitrust really rubs up against labor law in some interesting ways. But what I would say is, in general, you're seeing the Biden administration and his appointees, there's sort of a party line understanding of, you got to put money in people's pockets, you got to give workers some power in the workplace. We're reading tea leaves to a certain extent, which, you know, sort of back to the future there. I mean, the parallels with 1933 are really striking. Mm. You know, I mean, when Roosevelt was coming into office, people were guessing what he meant by a New Deal. And frankly, his first year in office was full of stumbles and I would say misplaced priorities. It was a much more pro-corporate agenda than it was a pro-worker agenda. But what it did, I think that I'm looking for a redo of here, is it did just enough to sort of raise workers' hopes about what is possible and what government can deliver, and then dash their expectations when the bosses fought back. And that got us a strike wave in 1934 that got us the actual New Deal that we remember. Hmm.
So, and Steven Mnuchin is the name I was trying to remember earlier. So there have been, efforts, of course, for people to unionize regularly. What is not as known is the countering effects and efforts by the bosses, by employers, to squash them. Amazon, which is the world's largest corporation now, headed by the world's richest man, and that has had a windfall of profits over the past year during the pandemic, due to the pandemic, has a new effort to undermine union activity. They had the audacity to put out this bizarre website, and I encourage people to take a look at it. It's called doitwithoutdues.com, do it without dues. And I guess the idea is that in some utopia that Jeff Bezos imagines, his workers would have all the rights they wanted without having to pay union dues, except, of course, that he doesn't give them those rights. What do you make of this effort?
I mean, I intentionally did not look at the website because I've seen enough anti-union propaganda in my life that I'm just bored. what I've heard from it is, it sounds like it's just incredibly lame. It's just stock. It's just a mimeographed thing of campaigns that I worked on 20 years ago. What it does, though, is, it sends a message to all employees, hey, your boss is against this. Really, that's all they got to say. Honestly, Amazon, they got more money than God, so it doesn't matter. But they could have saved a lot of money by just getting a website that says your boss is against this. And the message is across. The real anti-union campaign is all of the activists who get fired over the years who have been organizing. And there have been many activists organizing in the warehouses and in other parts of the Amazon supply and distribution chain. Under the current labor law, Amazon can just appeal. I mean, one of their strategies, which is just revoltingly disgusting here, is they're trying to force an in-person election during COVID.
Right.
Because, an in-person NLRB election means you have to walk past your boss just for that final reminder of, we're against this. And who cares if, you get a potentially life-threatening disease as a result? All that Amazon cares about is that the union effort gets beaten back.
There's also Google workers who successfully formed the first union in the tech industry, the Alphabet Workers Union. We'd recently interviewed one of the organizers on our program. Are you heartened by this formation and the possibility that it might spread in the tech industry in Silicon Valley? You know, white collar workers being unionized can only be a good thing, even if they are white collar workers.
I am heartened. And what I'm heartened about is the approach that the union is taking. You know, they're not going for an NLRB election.
Right.
They just said, hey, we're a union, join.
So they're growing their ranks first.
Yeah, join the union, pay dues, join the union, come to meetings, and let's figure out what it looks like to get collective bargaining at Google, which, you know, think about it. I mean, if you're a Google employee sitting in France, you know, working for a subcontractor of Google, what country's laws are you even under, right? It's an incredibly complex thing, but they just cut through all that by saying, we're a union and we want Google to come to the table. We want Google to stop being evil. And that is, that's the kind of action that more unions should be taking. I think that we really need a little more creativity in our organizing campaigns. I would also say that, you know, the Alphabet Workers Union is affiliated with the Communication Workers of America, which is a very good union. They punch above their weight. And in their structure and in their culture, there is a high degree of respect for local autonomy, so that the Alphabet Workers Union is really the Alphabet Workers Union. And the workers at Google are going to be determining much of the strategy moving forward. I've been through similar things like this when I ran the charter school organizing division at AFT. You know, when you're working with an organizing committee of workers who are empowered, who are smart, who are trained, it's a delicate dance. It's a lot of negotiations. You know, you've got the experience and you feel like, oh, we should be doing this, but it's like they know their workplace and they know their employer, and you just try to come up with plans that make sense to both of you, to all of you. I'm very heartened.
Do you think that the Biden era will be easier for such efforts for workers to unionize? And actually, we just even had, going back to the attacks on unions, we had a recent Supreme Court decision that went barely noticed. It was actually around the Janus decision, the right to work laws. The Supreme Court announced that it would not hear a block of cases that would have financially penalized public sector unions that collected dues when those dues were legal, but then when those dues became illegal after the Janus decision, there was a fear that they would be financially penalized, essentially defunded, and the Supreme Court declined to hear them, which at least is a little line in the sand. But do you think that the Biden era might be an easier time for people to unionize, for existing unions to get what they need? Will they face a friendlier NRL and LRB, National Labor Relations Board?
There's several questions in there. I mean, it's never easy to organize. Yeah. So organizing never gets easier. They might face a more friendly administration. I've got this bingo card of things that I hate to hear politicians say. And one of the boxes is, you know, make it easier for workers to organize. No, that shouldn't be the lift. And one of my biggest criticisms of the PRO Act is that it's still sort of focused on this winner takes all election through the NLRB that the bosses and the Republicans love to analogize as, like, you know, as a government election, right? Except when you're voting for Congress, you're voting for who's going to represent you in Congress. You're not voting for, is there even going to be a Congress? And that's the high stakes of a union election. If 47% of the workers in a workplace want to have a union, but they can't get 50% plus one to vote for the union, and 50% plus one isn't even going to get them a union contract, they don't get a union. You don't have a government. What we need is to move towards systems of labor representation that are all in. There's a government on day one, and you as the workers get to decide who you want your representative to be. But there's no question that the boss, in some fashion or another, needs to meet with you and to negotiate with you. And so I've been pointing towards, you know, the Works Councils model in Germany is one. sectoral bargaining models that exist in many other countries, or again, going back to the future, you know, that first New Deal had sort of wage boards and you know, Blue Eagle standards boards that would set pay and working standards across entire industries that apply to all employers, regardless of whether a worker, an individual worker, belonged to the union or not. The NLRB framework is just, it's way too high stakes, and it allows employers to secede from responsibility and secede from the system itself. Every workplace should have a government. Every workplace does have a government. Most of them are dictatorships. We need more constitutional monarchies, if not outright democracies.
Well, Sean, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
My guest has been Sean Richman. He's the author of Tell the Bosses We're Coming, A New Action Plan for Workers in the 21st Century. He's a former union organizer and representative, and he's the program director of the Harry Van Arsdale Jr. School of Labor Studies at SUNY Empire State College. And we've been discussing the prospects for raising the minimum wage and unionization under the Biden administration. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com. You can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.